Louise, thank you very much for taking the time to sit down with me today and talk about the Kitimat Museum. Let's start with yourself. How did you get involved with museums and specifically the Kitimat Museum? What was your background?
I was in the Museum of Anthropology doing museum studies and taking anthropology. So I graduated with a Bachelor of Arts and in 1988, which is a long, long time ago. Came up here in 1996, and I've been here, well, I guess I'm in my 24th year here. So yeah, we're the Kitimat Museum and Archives. We changed our name a few years back. We were Kitimat Centennial Museum. It was a centennial project in 1969, and we got some funding from the federal government, and it was basically a municipal project to start a museum for Kitimat, and it's been going ever since. We just celebrated our 50th year.
What was the nature of those early collections?
Well, they didn't have one. Yeah. They didn't actually have one. They had to create one. Yeah. And the first curator was Gisela Mendel, and she began in 1969. She worked till 1980, and she was very instrumental in amassing a collection for the museum. And in those days, it was very regional because there was the Museum of Northern BC, which is in Prince Rupert. But the other, basically the other museum close to that was the Kitimat Centennial Museum. And Gisela felt a certain level of responsibility to collect regionally. So she started with a natural history collection. She was quite a identifier. She spent a lot of time with detail and trying to identify different specimens for natural history. She created a flora collection to identify all of the flora in the area. And then she also collected fossils and geology specimens from around the region, as well as items that had been in the mining area around the region. And so she had started really quite a collection, as well as Haisla. She spent a great deal of time with different Haisla elders and talking with them about their culture. And she collected quite a few baskets and carvings and other materials they use for hunting and fishing. And she did really do the start of the collection was through her, and followed up by James. He was the next curator, James Tyrrell Jones, and he did quite an amazing amount of recording of fishing technique, and he did carving and met with Haisla people who were carving and weaving baskets, and he did some project work with them, and he was an archaeologist, his background, so they did a work together, the museum and Haisla Nation Council, to hold an archaeological field school in one of the reserves that had a settlement, an old settlement there, as well as another settlement. So they worked together and partnered on an archaeology project. We hold in trust a number of items for the Haisla Nation Council. And then Gisela also did a lot of collecting of the Kitimat Power Project. So Kitimat's a very young town, 60 plus years. In 1953, it was incorporated. So the museum came along pretty quickly after that in 1969. So as far as the town history, there wasn't a lot, but the curators all felt that it was important to record that construction of the power project for the aluminum smelter. So we have a vast amount of archival materials and collections, artifacts that are examples of that, come from that time period, and record that history. So it's very varied because we're trying to do different things as an institution. So we have lots of visual arts is part of what we do as well for the community, because we are the exhibition center where we do provide that to the residents, as well as the archives and then the museum exhibitions that we do.
In looking at the collection, are there any blind spots, any stories that you feel are underrepresented that you're working to gather information and documentation about?
Well, currently we have holdings that are Heisla artifacts, and well, we have three cases that we ordered, and we've arranged these pieces in the cases, but we of course needed interpretive panels or cultural information to go with all of the artifacts. So we went to Heisla educational people, all of the people who are gathering and working for their government, and we asked for some help in presenting proper cultural information and language with these nine panels with the artifacts. Mm-hmm. And so that was very helpful for us to learn about Heisla even more. Mm-hmm. And so it includes language, it includes parts of the culture and the territory, and to acknowledge all of the long time that the people have been on the land here in this area, and all of the things that they have had for their own cultural group. It's been very interesting and very rewarding for me and for staff to have done that work with the Heisla Education Center. One thing that I did do when I first came several years into my job, I decided there was a need for oral histories on the power project, and there are many engineers and many, many people who worked on the power project, electricians, rock tunnelers, and all kinds of engineers. I spent my time, and I had to work with Ken Faberhold, who is also in the museum community. And we interviewed, did oral histories with over 30 interviews we did that are now in the archives on those early days of construction and just what the parts of the power project required to all the way from the reservoir to the powerhouse to the transmission line and the smelter. That was very rewarding to me as well, to collect that information and have it available in perpetuity at the museum. Mm-hmm. Definitely our hope is to make it even more accessible online. I think that's where I'm going, is the whole idea of accessibility really is important. I think that's my next big step.
At the moment, are there any events, individuals, changes that are taking place in the community that you're eager to gather documentation about?
One area that I have been totally intrigued with is the whole idea of the UN's sustainability, sustainable development goals. They're stated that they want them, I guess, towards a better planet by 2030. And in those goals are the ideas of a clean environment or healthy communities. And I thought that we had kind of focus groups, and I was in a couple of focus groups here, and the agency that came was based in Vancouver, and they spoke with us about combining our efforts or coming together and talking about these development goals. I would like to do perhaps an exhibition and programming on working with the local agencies who are working for a cleaner environment. and who are tackling carbon reduction and the whole idea of global warming. And this has always been a, well, continues to be a very interesting area for me. So I would like to see what we're doing at the local level to meet these goals for a cleaner environment.
What are some exhibitions that you see on the horizon?
Well, that one, I was thinking of that, working with our local partners. We do have recycling, people who are interested in recycling, people who are trying to work to reduce impact on the land from human habitation, and gather all those people together and create something for an exhibition that we can share with everyone on all the efforts that everyone is doing in, at the local level to have cleaner community. I have to think about how the museum's artifacts could play a part in that, what we're looking at there. You know, it all comes back to is it the museum and what part it can play in that, in perhaps change, in perhaps just recording what has been done so far. And
is that a working method that you use when building exhibitions? You know, using a sort of focus group to develop an idea and then looking at the collection with that question, or is that something?
Yeah, I think that's it's the most relevant way I find. Every museum has a pioneer collection, it seems, so we could talk about that. But why not talk about the pioneer collection in terms of what the manual effort that people had in the days when before energy occurred, before they had power, and use those to talk about that time. Yeah, I think that there's something to be learned about what humanity was doing with its time and how much effort it was taking to go all over the place, where the pioneers, they just stayed in place and did what they had to do to survive. The thing that's held us back over a number of years is our space issues. We do not have the space to do what we need to do or would like to do, and we're stuffed to the gills with people and things. And we've been really, in the last 5 years, I'd say, well, even longer since I've been here, we've been talking about a new building. And I think we're getting closer, much closer. Now we're working with Donald Lexton on a strategic plan for our future.
Back to the collection for a moment. Are there any new acquisitions or donations that you're excited about?
Well, I have to say, too, over the years, we have added incredible numbers of photographs to our collection. So we actually, in the early 2000s, we knew that the Northern Sentinel Press collection, we knew that the Northern Sentinel, our local Kitimat paper, had an extensive collection of photographs from starting in 1955 and going all the way, 54, going all the way up to now, and they're still operating. So we were able to obtain boxes of those and to do our due diligence in putting them on our database and assigning them numbers and rehousing them. So we have that newspaper collection. As well, Max Patzelt, our local documentary photographer, he was Kitimat's photographer for over 30 years, and he amassed quite a collection, and he gave us that collection, plus a collection of the methanol plant, Ocelot, and for Uricane, which was our pulp and paper mill that is shut down since, but construction of both of those. So we, amassed quite a huge collection of and welcomed his collection. Certainly we've added to the Heisler collection, but recently we received a large sizable donation from Lyle Wilson, Heisler master carver that many people know. And he's given us a donation of his artwork, retrospective. And it's been quite lovely to receive that in a donation from him.
You'd mentioned the thought of a new building. Are there any other aspirations, hopes on the horizon for 5 years out, 10 years out for the Kitimat Museum? What do you see as its future?
Well, I really would like to see more of a partnership with the Heisler Nation in that space. I mean, that's where I'd really love to go, is to have more working together to fulfill some of their goals, to see that we all reach our goals to working together and providing that, say, professional expertise, maybe mentoring some people, Heisler Nation people who would like to be that work as curatorial staff in their areas. And a bigger facility, there's a huge amount of stories to be told for the multicultural aspect of Kitimat and how many different people came here to work in the smelter. So there was a large Portuguese community, and still is, and as well Filipino community. There were many, many different nationalities here to work. At the beginning of the 50s, there were quite a number of clubs. Well, Luso Canadian Club, that's the Portuguese club they had formed, their association. And but there was the German club and the Greek club, and there were many, many people here.
Are many of those communities still in the Kitimat area, or has there been a sort of change in the populations over the years?
Yes, yeah, it's been a lessening of the diversity of a lot of people. Well, many people have stayed, but many, many people have moved to the larger centers like the Lower Mainland and into the interior around Kelowna, that area, and Kamloops, and onto Vancouver Island. So as we see populations, a lot of people don't want to remain in Kitimat. They end up migrating down south. But then there are strong families that have stayed here from the early days that have made Kitimat their home and stay, and their families stay here. So we don't have a German club anymore, or a Greek club. Those things have those, and Chinese. There is also large Chinese and Indo-Canadian communities here too. Things have changed a lot as the population has ebbed and flowed based on the industries.
Has that posed a challenge in gathering materials about these societies and these populations, or are you finding you're trying to get in contact with them? What's
the strategy? Well, we have a few records for different organizations, and I do attempt to obtain those. But that, yeah, that's, I'd say in a way we're little, like we haven't got that plan in place to collect. It's challenging. We do what we can to collect what we can. One of them is the Aluminum City Telethon, and Telethon has been running for over 30 years. It's, it has been run to raise money for agencies, charities in Kitimat. They're based in Kitimat. It's a huge fundraiser. We also have collected citizenship ledger for the Citizenship Council. We also, a number of years ago, we wanted to interview a group of Portuguese women, and so we did the exhibition, a temporary exhibit, called Portuguese Women, and it was of the women who had made their journey from Portugal to this isolated place in the north of BC to join their husbands, and the stories of that that journey, and then the artifacts that we showed, we were able to show some artifacts of items they had brought from the old country, and they raised their families here and they stayed here. And so many of these women were not fluent in English, so they were interviewed in Portuguese. The women thought that they were really had been unimportant to their stories, but in fact they were very important for their establishment of Kitimat and for their families, and number of them, those women now have passed. That is when I feel her work is very rewarding, when we can do something like that and record something that is little, like maybe forgotten to time, you know?
Well, Louise, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me, and we look forward to hearing all the new developments of the Kitimat Museum.
Thank you. Thanks very much, Spencer.